Rolling, rolling, rolling. Oh, this one's
mine. Start the countdown.
Five.
Four.
Three.
Two.
One. Good morning, Mr. and Mrs. America, and all the chips in the PC. It is Sunday, the, I have no idea, 5th of October, Anno Domini 2008, and you, you lucky people, you're listening to Sound Bites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Reich.
And I am clearly a little too relaxed when we're not actually on the air. This is a podcast-only edition of our show. We'll be bringing you some news, some views, some stuff you can lose. We've got donuts to choose. As soon as the meds kick in. The meds have clearly already kicked in, so I think we're on our way and ready to go.
I've been on them for a couple days now.
Dave's a hurting puppy. He was doing something very odd.
Yeah, but I wish I could remember what it was, because I'd do it again. Yeah. It was that good. Throw a muscle out.
I had a friend who threw out a whole bunch of muscles in his back, and he could name each one and tell me what happened to him. He said, you know, if you ever do this, I can help you to work your way through it holistically and all this stuff. And I said, wait a minute. Aren't you the guy who told me you hurt yourself doing yoga? And I'm going to let you treat me holistically? I think not.
Right.
I think not. If I ever do that, I will go to a doctor. All right, here we go. This is our poll of the week. Every week, of course, we do a poll at soundbites.org. That's bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you. Last week's poll was, what is your email program? We saw that there were some problems with some email programs. 329 of you voted, tying for 122 on the all-time hit list, thanks to each and every one of you. It seems that the email program of choice for our listeners is 38% of you on Thunderbird, 26% of you on web-based mail, Gmail, Hotmail, whatever, whatever, followed by Outlook, Other, Mail, Outlook Express. Six of you are on text-based mail, and five of you have no idea. This week's poll is based on a news item. It seems that Microsoft has what they're calling a hiring chill. So the question is, what are other tech giants doing with their hiring plans? A little hard to get a clear picture of what other companies are doing, in part because so many have already announced plans to cut jobs. Intel's workforce is down thousands from where it was a couple of years ago. Hewlett-Packard has already said it plans to shave 24,000 jobs as part of its EDS purchase. Dell and others have already been cutting back. Yahoo, which is already under pressure from competitor Google and the ugly saga of the Microsoft attempt to acquire the company, said on Friday that it's bracing itself for a weaker advertising market. No one would confirm that layoffs are part of the plan, but payroll is, of course, a major expense, and most employees know how to read the tea leaves when they hear the word streamline. Though Yahoo itself is under pressure, Yahoo spokes individual said that the economy and the advertising market led to the current analysis. The collapse of the credit markets accelerated what had already been a pretty uncertain market, he said. For its part, Google said, we continue to hire talented people across functions for our offices worldwide. Of course, the real question is, at what pace they continue that hiring? Many expect TV and print advertising to be hit harder, but that doesn't mean online ads are immune. Even if individual ads or campaigns are profitable, the ad market can be hurt when customers tighten their purse strings and advertisers reduce spending. Dell said the company is certainly monitoring things, but has nothing new to announce. Dell had cut 8,500 workers from its ranks in the last four quarters. HP said they're rebalancing. IBM said they haven't announced any freeze. Microsoft said we will continue to grow and add thousands of new jobs this year. But given the current economic environment, we are taking the prudent step of reviewing our hiring plans and making some adjustments as appropriate. So the question this time is, are you looking for a job in or already employed in the tech field? And the choices are pretty simple this time. Yes and no. You either is or you ain't. And those are your two choices. I'm not giving you any others. If you don't like them, make your own polls. So far, we have 59 votes. And overwhelmingly, 71% of you are not, in fact, employed in the tech field. Once you have done with that poll, by the way, check underneath it. You will see a little yellow box. If you click on Give Us Your Opinion, that will take you to my website, AskNick.com.
That's AskNick.com.
Bing.
Thank you. Where you can put in your opinion. Check out my site. I do a newsletter. I have forums. It's you can search old newsletters. That alone is worth $15 a year. So feel free to join up. I won't be upset if you do. And then come on back to the Soundbites page and join us there. We're also we're going to be on Second Life today.
Yep.
From
well, if you're listening to this, it's already too late because this will be airing at 4 o'clock.
Right, and more importantly, we're on the air we're on Second Life every Friday at 9 p.m.
Eastern Standard Time,
9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 6 p.m. Second Life time.
One thing though, we should announce though is next week we've got a spokesperson, Mike. I forget his last name, will be on the show because next week we do a live show. So we're going to be back on the air live for next Sunday.
At 11 o'clock. Eastern.
Regular time. And we are going to have a gentleman on from LifeLock. So, you know, you've seen the ads for all these, you know, commercials and everything else telling you, oh, I even put up my identity. And so we'll be able to ask him. So this should be an interesting one because, you know, we've always, you know, heard other rumors. Oh, yeah, he's got cracked, you know, and blah, blah, blah. Well, we'll be able to actually ask somebody from LifeLock the true down and dirty about the product.
Right. And that's the 12th of October?
Yep.
Eastern?
Yep.
And
it's one of the two shows that we'll be doing.
Right.
This October 12th is one live show that we'll be doing.
It's a bye week for the Bills.
And then November 16th is another, well, they're
it's
playing
a Monday game.
Yeah, so they're playing Monday, so we get to be on the air on Sunday, all regular programming. And then
plans could still change up to the second before we go on the air.
That's into the second after we're on the air, I believe.
And then we will be back on the air after the first of the year. So, you know, you just got to stay tuned.
Depending on playoffs.
Yeah. Well, the way they're going right now, I mean, what?
It could happen.
Yeah.
Yep.
So, but they'll probably, you know, it's anything like their past four times at the Super Bowl.
Right.
That's what I keep rubbing into my brother-in-law, because he's a Buffalo Bills fan, and I'm a Kansas City Chiefs fan.
There you go.
And I go, well, wait a minute, let's see. Buffalo's been to the Super Bowl how many times, and how many rings did they have? And you go,
well, they have four, right? They're just silver. We're number two.
And I go, my Kansas City Chiefs went once, and gee, they got a ring.
Yep.
So, yeah, no, what I was doing before is your mic was a little too high. You were pegging way off the wall, so I just moved
that's
it down
me.
Just
that's what I do.
No, that's good. That way, you know, there's no problem. Chris doesn't have to play around too much with the sound.
Right. Well, at any rate, every Friday night, without fail, at 9 p.m.,
and
we are in Second Life.
And getting quite a crowd. I mean, it's amazing when you go through there and see the number of folks from the variety of countries.
Right. And our hope, of course, is that the people in Second Life will start pulling the podcast for the show and we'll grow our audience that way.
Yep.
Also, for those of you who are unable or unwilling to actually do Second Life, we have a page set up, BE Web, and you'll see a link during the during that Friday night business, which will let you follow along to anything that's typed right on the web. So you can type in the web, and your question will appear before us in Second Life, and we will type the answer, and that answer will appear before you. And if you are using the web interface into Second Life, please let us know. Type something in right away so I will type all the answers. Otherwise, we will speak most of the answers and you won't get them and it'll look a little disjointed. So if you let us know you're there, we'll make sure we accommodate that.
Did you get to Lolly's opening? I went for a few
minutes. I did. Lolly had her opening, the Artsy Fartsy Gallery. It was very, very nice.
I was there around 3:30. I was in it for a little while and then my service for DSL popped out.
Well, and in fact, that happened. I felt very bad for her. It was not terribly well attended because there was a rolling restart again for Second Life this weekend, and it just kept popping people out all over the place. Poor Argyle was in and out and in and out and in and out. And of course, you can't tell for him whether it was the wireless he was on or the Second Life
what
itself.
What cafe was it next?
Right. So there were some problems there, but we had a long talk about various things and things you could do to advertise and stuff like that, but it's the Artsy Fartsy Gallery, and you can look it up, do a search in Second Life. A-R-T-S-E-A,
Artsy. We've got to tell her to redo it again, just sort of a...
Well, yeah, well, I got to wait for Second Life to settle down a little bit.
You have a soft opening, and then you have a real grand opening.
That's exactly it. That's exactly it. All right.
We'll just have to talk to her, because, I mean, they have put so much time and effort, her and Newt.
Right. So while they're trying to open new horizons with Second Life, we are also cognizant of those of our listeners who don't do Second Life, so we have made the web interface as best we can. Well, obviously, Second Life is fairly closed off.
Well, that brings up another thing. You know, I've had a number of folks through the emails and that type of stuff were asking, well, you're not on the web anymore. You know, you're not on the web. I went at 1 o'clock and you're not there. And again, folks, you've got to pay attention to what time the Buffalo Bills are playing. If they play at 1, then we're on at 1. If they're on at 4, then we will have this recorded broadcast at 4 o'clock. You've got to pay attention.
Yeah, we're on opposite the Bills game whenever the Bills game is on.
Yeah.
Right. Unfortunately, that's the way this has to work. And it is. I'm going to say it again. God bless Jeff Howlett and the folks here at Wham. Yep. They're keeping us alive and on the air. They could have said, as they've done to a couple of their other shows, just turn them off. You know, they'll come back in January. Get over it.
Yeah.
But they're giving us the time. They're giving us the place. They're putting us on instead of the Bills. And I am, for one, I'm very, very grateful of that. But it is a little discombobulating and a little disjointed, particularly if you're not the sort of person who follows sports. If you're not a football fan, you don't know when the Bills are playing.
Yep.
You don't think to go look for when the Bills are playing. But we're on opposite the Bills.
And if you are a football fan, you'll probably be watching the Bills
and not us.
But you can watch the Bills and listen to us.
But if you're a football fan and a Bills football fan.
Yeah, that narrows it down a little more.
But that brings us down to they've got to check the website.
Yep.
Through the website, we will keep you informed of when we're on and we're not on. So it makes it a lot easier, you know, if the folks could just pay attention to that. Right now, through these times and that, like you say, Jeff is being great, even still letting us do it through the rest of the year so that the folks are still getting their questions answered. And now that you've put up that other, the big ear, that folks, if you can't get into Second Life, because a lot of folks were also emailing me, well, you've given up on us, you know, some of us have a first life. Well, we appreciate that, but there's nothing we can do, us three can't do anything as far as being bumped off the radio.
We don't have a radio station of our own to program what we want on.
Yeah, exactly.
And, you know, and I'm getting it. Well, it's still a very inconvenient time. Yeah. Well, you know, that one I'm tired of talking to, you know. I mean, our three lives are kind of disjointed, too, because, you know, on Sundays, instead of being home relaxing like you folks are with your families,
we're driving around trying to find a way into Euclid Street.
Yeah. Because now they've closed the ramp garage.
Yeah, what was that race there this morning that you couldn't get by any of the ramps?
It's a walk for breast cancer.
Okay.
So, you know, I mean, we're doing the best we can with what we got. And Second Life just happens to be another media.
Well, and that's what I tell people is we haven't abandoned anybody else. We're just opening new vistas for ourselves.
Yeah.
It's a new place to do things. What have we abandoned? What have we stopped doing?
It's just an unfortunate coincidence. Well, it's not a coincidence. We started doing Second Life because we knew we were going to be off the air for the Bills.
We were trying. That's why we started so early back in June, preparing folks, telling them, you know, start getting familiar with Second Life because this is going to be. But now you've opened up another door with the second or the big ear.
Right.
That if they can't get in there, they can still go to our webpage. That's why I say it's critical that folks go to our webpage and check it out, because from there they can find out what's going on. If they can't get in, they can click on that and text in. And like you said, you've been very responsive to seeing if folks are typing in a question and getting it answered.
Right. All right, moving on. You probably heard about the heart attack that Steve Jobs purportedly had earlier this week. And then you probably heard, I hope, that it was a false report. Well, the Securities and Exchange Commission is looking for the person who falsely reported that Steve Jobs, the CEO of Apple, had not actually suffered a heart attack on Friday. Jennifer Martin, a CNN spokes individual, said that the SEC investigators made contact with the cable news broadcaster CNN seeking information on the person who posted the phony story to iReport.com, which is owned by CNN. And it hosts news submitted by members of the public. The Jobs heart attack story was categorically denied by Apple, but not before the company's stock was already in a steep dive. Shares of Apple fell more than 9% before rebounding. Apple's share price closed trading Friday at $97.07, which was down, still down 3%. Some observers have speculated that someone may have posted the story to manipulate the stock market. A source close to the investigation said that CNN had attempted to make contact with the anonymous poster, but had not received a reply. Duh. Martin declined to say what kind of information the SEC had requested. In order to submit a story on iReport, a person needs only to submit an email address. Martin said that it clearly says on the site that most stories are not edited, filtered, or vetted. Those stories that have been checked out are labeled on CNN. This means that the cable network has verified the report and using it on a CNN-branded TV show or website. The Jobs heart attack story never got that label. Nevertheless, many people believed it and began shorting Apple stock because they just needed to be out of this. Because apparently, it's not Apple at all. It's Jobs. Steve Jobs goes and the investor confidence in the company just disappears.
It would be an interesting exercise to calculate the monetary value of how much the stock changed.
Of Steve Jobs? Yeah.
Of the total market value, I mean. Add up how much Apple stock was
impacted
by 9%.
Yeah.
And how many outstanding shares
there are? How many outstanding shares is the question.
Apple has, I think, now the highest market cap of any company. I just don't remember reading that. They beat
long as Steve Jobs is there, right, I guess.
Yeah.
That's my point. Is Apple not considered a viable company without him?
Well,
clearly, by investors, there's certainly a percentage of them who believe that.
Yes, and that's what counts, is what the investors think, not
because
what actuality is.
Because that's their customer. I've said this 100 times. Once you're a publicly traded company, you only have one customer, and that's the shareholder.
Yep.
Similar thing happened last year when somebody reported in one of the tech blogs that the iPhone was going to be delayed 6 months, and the stock cracked 10% is a pretty big crash.
It's huge.
Overnight. Within a couple hours before all the retractions started going out, and the same sort of investigation happened to the bloggers.
Right.
I haven't heard what happened to it.
So if I were Steve Jobs, I might be thinking about asking for a doubling of my salary to $2 a year.
Yeah. Well, it's been interesting since in the last year or so that some of the public venues that he's done speeches at, more people have been commenting on his health and how bad he looks. He's thin and sort of gaunt.
Well, he had cancer.
He had cancer, and he survived the cancer. So the big speculation is the cancer's back, but that turned out not to be true. Most people are just calling it vegan chic. He's a vegan, and that's what vegans look like, sort of pale and gaunt. Apologies to any vegans.
Not that there's anything wrong with that.
Apologies to any vegans who are not pale and gaunt.
Complaint letter should be sent to at soundbites.org. At soundbites.org.
At the September iPod refresh event where the new iPods came out, he put a slide up quoting Mark Twain that the rumors of my death are greatly exaggerated, and let's move on. You know?
Yeah, right.
I'm fine. Forget about it now. And they've got a really big management team in place to take over when Steve Jobs does eventually retire.
But we never hear about that.
Well,
you're a close insider. You might hear a little, but I don't.
There was a little bit in the tech news this week because Apple, they gave $100-some-odd million in shares to their corporate staff.
Right.
Tim Cook, the CFO, no, he's the COO, and Oppenheimer, the CFO. Phil Schiller and Jonathan Ives.
Robert Oppenheimer still alive and
over like
Apple?
That. Yep. What do you mean? Peter Oppenheimer, his son. Probably grandson by now.
Probably grandson.
Yeah. So the Apple management staff just got huge stock bonuses. They don't vest for 3 years, so they're trying to keep the executives in place for when Steve Jobs does leave.
Well, I guarantee you there's somebody over there right now formulating a plan to make people much, much, much more aware of the management team and their credentials and their capabilities and what they've done and what they will do,
yep,
so that this sort of thing doesn't happen again.
As Microsoft did. Microsoft let us know a long time before Bill Gates was going to retire, and Apple should be letting us know that the thing's not going to fall apart when Steve leaves whatever reason.
That was one of the big criticisms in a lot of the tech blogs, is that if Steve is sick, they have a fiduciary responsibility to the shareholders to say so. And the other side of that argument was why? You know, Steve Jobs is not Apple. If Steve leaves, the company's going to continue.
But it's about the perception,
yeah.
You know?
Well, look at history. Look at what happened to Apple when Steve wasn't there.
Right. Look what happened at this heart attack story.
Mm-hmm.
I don't care. I agree with you. Steve Jobs is not Apple. There's a whole lot more to Apple than Steve Jobs. But if the perception of the shareholders is that if Steve Jobs dies, Apple dies.
Yep.
They really need to change that perception while he's still healthy.
Yes.
Apple's current Apple's current market cap is $86 billion.
Is that all?
So 10% of that is $8 billion they lost.
Yep.
In an afternoon.
Yep.
For a little while.
And just think, they just could have given me $1 billion, and I would have spread the rumor that he was healthy as a horse.
Yeah.
They could have saved themselves $9 billion by talking to me. Apple, are you listening?
Apple would have been a better company for a million.
Oh, you cheap son of a gun.
Yes. Hey.
Oh, you make me sick.
They're going to run him out of the room.
That's
here.
It.
Because you know what?
Scab.
Unbelievable. They'll jump on that so fast. $1 million?
You scab.
Give me that cash, and man, I'll get the word out there like you wouldn't believe.
Knocking on doors.
I'll be standing on my rooftop, and I don't like heights. I hate heights.
So I was just surfing around at iReport.com. There's some disgusting stories on there. Apparently what happens in Vegas doesn't always stay in Vegas. And
well, here's what you have to remember.
The title of the page is Lies and More Lies, iReport.com.
Yes, yes. Anybody, anywhere can post. All you have to do is have an email address. And we all know how easy it is to get a temporary email address without giving any other information and then dump it.
They even have a
but I thought you could believe anything on the internet.
Yeah. They have a statistic on the front page. 130,000 iReports have been posted. 1,200 have made it to CNN.
Yeah, right.
So what's that, 10%? No, 1%.
Soon there will be a report about Dave Enright is a scab and a cheap son of a gun. You look for it on iReport.
This recording is made. If not sooner.
And my email address is? Ask Nick.
No, it'll be like I lied to iReport@yahoo.com is the way that'll be done.
Well, that's the thing. Oh, and that, speaking of, you know, bogus email addresses and all that other junk, I should mention again, because it was a couple of emails on it, as far as getting on to the Soundbites forums, please, and I can't say this enough, please put in a legitimate city and state. That's what I scan for now, because I'm getting so many robots.
Dozens a day.
Within the past 2 days, I had over 688, which you divide that in half, requests to get in there, and all of them were these robots just offering all kinds of pills and porn and everything else that I have totally eliminated popping up on the Soundbites webpage. So all I'm asking, and folks say, well, I don't like to give out my personal information. All I'm asking for is a city and state.
And it doesn't even if it's your own.
Notice he didn't say your city and state.
It doesn't have to be
a city and state.
Yes, a legit city and state, and I will put it in. Because you don't, I'm not going to. Because the robots put in so much, that's what I'm scanning on. And it just makes my life easier. And we're not giving away a national secret that even if you were to say Rochester, New York, how the heck am I going to find out through your goofy name that you pick for a screen name, find you in Rochester, New York? It's impossible.
Apple Cider had to shut down new registrations to their forums because the registration spam got so bad.
Oh, and the then, robots out there, yeah.
A couple of weeks ago, we had got a new member who wanted to join the forum, so we turned it on for a minute so he could put his name in and sign up.
Yep.
500 spam accounts popped up in that minute.
We get them in through the Soundbites question.
Yeah, the email address.
Well, through that, and we're getting, you know, when I go to check the questions, so when folks are asking there are so many that are, you can tell they're robots because you open it up and it's just filled with all this junk.
Yep.
To go to web pages and I just automate, and you can tell they're no names or they've got goofy names. You open them up and there's all this information.
Are they starting to put the spam in the fields? So first name is, you know, buy Viagra. Last name is cheap interest rates.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So in order to even delete, to see that the thing is bad, you end up reading the spam.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And I don't know. Well, doesn't matter.
Yeah, we could go on and on.
Yeah, let's move on.
We could do a couple hour broadcast on that.
Yes, we could. Hey, guess what? For those of you who have been wondering when XP was going to die.
Yep.
Well.
It ain't.
Not yet.
I'm not dead yet.
And it ain't
I'm feeling much better. Yes, you are. No, I'm not.
I'll be off in a minute.
Microsoft,
help me out, can't you?
Yeah, right. Microsoft has extended the availability of XP on new PCs by 6 months. Computer makers that downgrade machines from Windows Vista Business or Windows Ultimate to Windows XP Professional. Right. We'll be able to obtain media for the latter through for XP Professional through the end of July 2009, a Microsoft spokes individual said on Friday. The new date is a change in policy. Previously, Microsoft had planned to halt XP Professional media shipments to major computer makers after January 31st, 2009. As more customers make the move to Windows Vista, we want to make sure that they are making that transition with confidence and that it is as smooth as possible. Providing downgrade media for a few more months is part of that commitment, said the spokes individual. Let me translate that. We want you to move to Vista, so we're providing a way for you to not have to.
No, the way I read it is system builders, Dell, HP, etc., have to buy Vista to put on a computer, then they can also buy XP to put on it, too.
It's what they call a downgrade certificate, yeah. But...
At extra cost.
At extra cost,
at extra cost.
Well, I remember back in the early days, when 2000 came out, a lot of machines came with 98 and 2000, and you picked which one you wanted when it first booted.
Right.
All right, hear me now, remember me later. By next June, at the latest, we will be hearing that they're going to extend it right on through the rest of the year, just to not upset the flow for next Christmas, and it gives them a little bit longer to get System 7 ready.
Right. So, which really is just going to be Vista, but as long as they call it something else.
It's well
that, that's the whole point of their Mojave commercials.
Right.
If you don't know it's Vista, you like it.
But see, the thing of it is I think it's going to be a cross-blend between XP, what they didn't put in XP that they had planned on, and some of the features in Vista. And it's not going to take all the requirements that Vista does right now. Because, I mean, Vista, you've got to have at least 3 gig. You've got to have a high-end graphics, 256 meg graphics at least.
Now, Dave, you mean 3 gig of memory.
Yeah, 3 gig of memory.
Not hard disk.
But that's... Right. But
320
that's,
gig hard drive.
Right, but that's been the pattern with Microsoft for decades.
And Apple, too.
For the next version of the operating system, you need a much beefier machine than for the last one. However, what they're finding is, particularly in these parlous economic times, people are not willing to buy that. They want another couple of years out of their machine. I'm driving a car that's 10 years old, and I'm not looking at giving it up anytime soon.
I'm seeing in my shop.
Because your daughter wants it.
Well, my daughter, I need to teach my daughter to drive, and I'd rather drive or let her drive the old clunker.
I think Steve is seeing the same thing. Right now, folks are taking the time to bring their machines in, at least in our shop, and saying, all right, go ahead and fix it. If I can get another year or so out of it, I'm going to. Because right now, with the economy the way it is, they're not going to spend the bucks. I mean, we might tell them, oh, yeah, well, you can get a new system for about $1,000.
Yeah, that's a classic pattern in a downturn of the economy. The people will fix things rather than replace them with the new stuff.
But was there something in the water last week? We got 25 machines in for service on Monday and Tuesday.
Yeah, we got. Yeah. we've been seeing a lot of it since.
And everyone wanted it done tomorrow.
Yeah. Since CompUSA closed, I think we're seeing more and more of that now. The local shops. And, you know, that's where folks are starting to turn to us to get the repairs. And like you said, Sam was ready to strangle one customer. I mean, I'll do a short rant here.
Excellent.
You know, folks, calling does not get it done faster. Matter of fact, don't be surprised if I sit there and tell you, well, gee, if I wasn't talking to you, I could be working on your machine.
In fact, we might put it off more because you've been a pain to us.
Right? Calling every day when we, you know, Sam brings it in and will tell you, but they don't tune that in. She'll tell you, you know, how many days it's going to take. Calling sooner than that doesn't get it done. Because I had one guy say, well, you're working on my computer. I go out and look at it and... No, it's the next one. Go on the bench. Well, I brought it in Friday. It's already Tuesday. You only said so. It's business days. You enjoy the weekend off. So do I.
And you deserve it.
We had a person this week. She stood in line. Like, you know, 5 machines came in at once. So she stood in line waiting to check her machine in. Hears us tell everyone ahead of her it's going to be 3 or 4 days before we get to it. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, so she starts to check it in. Well, can you look at it now? No, the 5 people ahead of you was 3 or 4 days before we can get to it. Of course, we're not going to look at yours now.
Right. Well, like Nick's old line.
Or you could tell her, what would get your checkbook out.
Do you want to call the other folks that are ahead of you and ask them if you can jump ahead of them? Because I'm sure it's just important to them as it is to you to get to your machine.
Right. But it's my only computer. It's probably their only computers, too.
Yep. Oh, I have another one.
Well, but we'd be happy to sell you another one for the interim.
I run my whole business on it. Well, you should really have a second computer then.
Right.
If you only have one computer, you're not seriously in business.
Right. Well, I had one woman say, but it's going to take that long? What are my kids going to do?
Yep.
It's like, read a book. Go out and play.
That's right.
We have people tell us it shouldn't take that long.
Bowling.
If you know how long it's going to take, fix it yourself.
Yeah.
It shouldn't have taken that long. In fact, we're a little annoyed now because Apple has started this customer survey. So when we order warranty parts from Apple, you know, we have to give them the customer's name and all that, which a lot of our customers are upset about. They don't want us giving their information even to Apple.
Right.
So Apple sends out surveys to people who had service and asked, how do you like your service?
Right.
We've gotten a couple of negative responses because it took too long. Yeah, and too long was a day. It shouldn't have taken that long. It was a simple problem. It shouldn't have taken that long to fix. How do you know how long it's going to take it to fix? How do you know a simple problem might not have a long fix?
And a simple problem may take you an hour and a half to find.
Right.
Yep. Yeah,
absolutely.
I can't get on the internet. That's a simple problem.
You know,
turn on is a simple problem.
Yeah. I've been having a problem with my car.
Mm-hmm.
And days and days went by. My mechanic couldn't find it. Nobody could figure out what it was. And it was one of those intermittent things that just makes you crazy. And of course, every time I brought it to him, it was running fine.
But of course.
So the other day I was driving along and it started and I was within 150 yards of his place. So I just, you know, late for my meeting, I don't care. I just pulled into his place and I said, it's doing it right now. He came out and said, it's the coolant sensor. Boom. Done. Yeah. You know, there were no code. The thing that made us both crazy is there were no codes in the machine. Because as far as the sensor was concerned, there was no problem.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
Because it was broken.
The sensor was broken.
The computer should have detected that it had been broken.
Well, what was broken is the fact that it wasn't reporting correctly. It wasn't that it was dead.
Yep.
It was saying no matter what happened, it was saying everything's fine, everything's fine, everything's fine.
There's a bad com port.
Yeah. Right. So, and it's going to be fixed Monday morning. Tomorrow morning I'll bring it in and it'll fix it. Done. Deal. It's good. But, so, you know what? That's a simple problem.
It was making a noise. What kind of noise? Oh, I got an error message. What was the error message? I don't know.
Yeah, right. I didn't write it down. Well, then I can't fix your machine until I see the error message. It's that simple.
Yep.
Did you ever hear the one about the Buick and the ice cream?
I don't think I want to. Do I?
No. It was a Chevrolet. It's a good story.
It's a good story.
Is this one about the penguin, too?
No.
Okay, this is a different one. Good.
It's a clean story.
Yeah. Right.
Steve knows a clean story?
Yeah. I told it to him.
Okay.
Oh, that explains it.
So a guy with his Buick or Chevy, whatever, with his car, goes to the garage and says, I've got this weird problem. Whenever I have vanilla ice cream for dinner, my car starts fine, and whenever I don't have vanilla ice cream, the car won't start. And doesn't make any sense. You know, the mechanic looked at it, couldn't find anything wrong. And
the mechanic blew away that symptom. He said, that just can't be.
That's just ridiculous. We can't do anything about that. So it turned out to be related to how stores stock their shelves. So every night after dinner, so eventually the mechanic goes home. This must have been a long time ago. The mechanic goes home with the family.
Oh, yeah, that doesn't happen anymore.
The mechanic typed the car overnight. So what he did was he went to the same store, bought vanilla ice cream, and he came out to the car and started up. Took the car again on a different trip, bought it was blueberry ice cream. Son of a gun, if the car wouldn't start. The guy was actually right. Here's the difference. The vanilla ice cream is prepackaged. It's handed right to the customer, and he goes out.
In the front of the store.
The blueberry ice cream had to be scooped out and served. Took long enough for the vapor lock to occur.
The car didn't start. Right. That's great.
Yeah.
That's great.
All right, go to Snopes. Is this a real story, or do we all just remember it?
It is really a story, yes.
Yeah, it is really a story. That's true. It is really a story. We got that point, yeah.
Is it a factual story?
that's a whole other question. All right, we do have an actual computer question to answer here. You know, you can write to us at soundbites.org and just send us email, sbites at Q&A or whatever we call it.
It's right there on the webpage.
Yeah, hello. Who's this? Paul. Paul from Rochester, New York writes, hello. When operating my computer, whether on the internet or not, I get this address icon that is a red X. Every 10 seconds, it states that I have a security problem. On occasion, it begins to run a program asking me to download this specific antivirus program. Messages occur that state if I do not do that, my career and personal life, along with my boss and friends, will be affected. How do I stop this? Here are two websites that pop up, personalityspy.com and bestsecurityexpertcleaner.com. I attempted to do the security tango. However, my computer freezes in safe mode when I attempt to run SpyBot. It ran for about 30 seconds and stated it was aborted by the user. Please help. Thanks.
That sounds like a simple problem.
Yes. It's a simple problem. What's the simple solution?
I'm looking to you. That's a Windows problem. I don't get involved in those.
Well, it clearly sounds like you have one of two things. You don't tell us whether this happens on every website you go to or whatever, but what it sounds to me, oh, yes, you do, because you say that it's whether you're on the internet or not. Okay, so clearly you have some sort of virus that is trying to get you to go to a specific web page to download yet more virus stuff.
It sounds like the XP antivirus 2008 or 2009.
Right, right.
So remember the old homepage redirectors that would change your homepage to, so you'd always go to a virus downloader?
Yep. Our suggestion, of course, is the Security Tango. And as we always say, if you can't run it in safe mode, run it in regular mode. Sometimes it just happens that there are various reasons why things won't run in safe mode. Try running it in regular mode. The best way to get rid of a thing like that is to bring it to Dave or Steve. They can pull your
and wait for a couple of days.
A simple problem. We pull your hard drive. We put it on our test bench, and it runs the whole security tango and takes 3 or 4 days.
Right.
Of just sitting there running and scanning.
Right. So, yes, it was a simple problem. No, the fix is very complex. That's why you bring it to them instead of doing it yourself. And it takes many days. Luckily, they're not charging you for all that time. They're charging you for the time to pull the hard drive and stick it on the bench and start the program.
Time in front of the computer, not the time it sits on the bench.
Right, and then time to go over maybe and look every couple of hours to see what's going on. Then the time to take it off and put it back in your machine.
We had a
You'll pay for that, but you won't pay for the 25 hours it ran the test.
And the electricity to do it.
Which is why we won't come to your house and do that.
Yeah.
I'll come to your house if you've got a spare room and you're buying the beer.
Because we would charge you for that time.
Yeah.
Right, that's
and
right.
Don't bother calling because my crystal ball is broken as far as telling you how long is this going to take.
Right.
Because the question is until it's done.
Right.
Now, first we got to figure out what's wrong. And we, I had a failed hard drive I was doing a data recovery on. Literally sat on my recovery bench for 2 months and then recovered everything.
Yeah.
2 months. The poor woman went on vacation, and she called during her vacation. Is it done yet? And she couldn't enjoy her vacation because all her life was on. Okay, now we sold her a backup drive, but her whole life was on this machine that was trying to recover the data.
Right. Was she grateful?
Yeah.
Was she grateful that you had spent 2 months, you had tied up a test machine for 2 months?
And we didn't lose power in the office to have to start over again?
Which, if it was the old office, was a kind of a rare event for you.
Yeah.
All right.
That leaks into this joke. We have our servers on UPSs.
Right.
Which, you should.
You should.
Right.
We had a power failure. In a Victor office, we have very few power problems, but we had a power failure one day, and all our cash registers went down. We didn't have any cash registers on the UPS.
Yeah.
The server's fine, but we can't sell anything.
Right, right. And that's fixed now, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yes, I bet it is.
By way of installing a cash drawer.
Yeah.
All right.
20th century technology. Gotta love it.
Exactly. Speaking of this stuff, several criminal gangs have acquired administrative login credentials for more than 200,000 websites, including the one used by the U.S. Postal Service, and have used the compromised domains to attack unsuspecting users' PCs with a notorious hacker exploit kit. More than a month ago, Ian Ahmet, Director of Security at Aladdin Knowledge Systems, found and infiltrated a server belonging to a longtime customer of Neosploit, which is a hacker toolkit used by cyber criminals to launch exploits against browsers and popular web software such as QuickTime or Adobe Reader. On that server, Ahmet uncovered logs showing the two or three hacker gangs had contributed to a massive pool of website usernames and passwords. We have counted more than 208,000 unique site credentials on the server, said Ahmet, and over 80,000 have been modified with malicious content. The site credentials were not the end, but only the means. The 80,000 modified sites were used as attack launch pads. Each served up exploit code provided by the Neosploit kit to any visitor running a Windows system that had not been fully patched. Huh. By examining the server logs, Ahmed was able to identify the sites whose logins had been compromised. He is now working with law enforcement agencies in both the U.S. and overseas, as well as with organizations like U.S. CERT, to tell site operators they need to change their administrative passwords, purge the malicious code, and secure their sites. The only compromised site he would name was the U.S. Postal Services at www.usps.gov. That site and others have been cleaned of the code that called Neosploit down on unsuspecting visitors. Also on the list were sites for governments and Fortune 500 companies, universities, and other businesses, including several unnamed weapons manufacturers. More than half of the affected sites belong to European companies and organizations. Other evidence that Ahmed gathered ranged from the way that criminals processed the site logins to the number of IP addresses authorized to access the credentials. The server-based application that validated the credentials and then modified the sites was completely automated, said Ahmed. Access to that application was restricted to about 6 or 7 IP addresses, so it's clear that that access was intended only for the use of the criminals using the server. Based on the number of IP addresses and their distribution, he estimated that 2 or 3 separate groups were involved. So, yeah, as we can see, nowadays you don't even have to go to a dodgy site to get caught.
Right.
You know, we just talked about an email from Paul from Rochester. He may have gone and gotten this from the United States Postal Service or any one of
they're legitimate
hundreds of
sites,
thousands of real sites. So, you know, a lot of people feel kind of skanky about bringing their machines in. I think I got a virus and I don't know where I got it, and I really haven't been anywhere bad, but I know you're not going to believe me. Yeah, we do believe you.
Yeah, because
absolutely.
Well, that's right up there when the parents bring it in. Well, my kids, you know, they must have been visiting sites and blah blah blah, and they blame it on the kids. I go, well, wait a minute, do you use it? Yeah, well, yeah, but I don't go anywhere that's bad. Doesn't matter nowadays.
Now you can ask them, have you been to the U.S. Postal Service site?
You can get mugged in the nice neighborhood just as easily as the bad neighborhood.
Yeah. Yes, you can.
And it's just not, you know, like I say, it's just not the kids. If the parents use it, it's just as much their fault as theirs. They'd love to blame the kids. So they have some reason to go after them, but not anymore.
Yeah, not necessarily.
It's become a universal problem. And if you were listening carefully, the way they got into machines was the Windows systems that had not been fully patched. So here's an idea. Keep your Windows system fully patched. Mac people, keep your Mac systems fully patched. There's nothing to say that this sort of thing isn't going on right now.
Right.
Against all you smug Mac people who don't bother to update.
Coming to a town local to you.
Yep.
And Linux as well.
And the Linux people as well.
Did we talk about the invisible button problem?
Yes. Yeah, last week.
Yeah, which will affect any browser.
Any browser, anywhere.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, you got to be really wary nowadays. It's no longer enough to say, I am not running Windows. It could be any operating system, anywhere, anytime. So try at least to be a little careful. In addition to that, vendors are now trying to fix a bug that could crash the internet itself. Internet infrastructure vendors working on patches for a set of security flaws that could help hackers knock servers offline with very little effort. Security community has been buzzing about the bug since Tuesday when security researcher Robert Hansen discussed the problem on his blog. Technical details have not been released, but security experts who discovered the problem, Robert Lee and Jack Lewis of security vendor Outpost 24, said they can knock Windows, Linux, embedded systems, and even firewalls offline with what's known as a DOS, denial of service attack. The flaws lie in the TCP/IP software that are used by the systems to send data over the internet. Lee and Lewis first discussed the problem last week at a conference in Amsterdam, and many of the affected vendors are now working on patching the issue with help from the Finnish National Computer Emergency Response Team, said Lee, who spent most of Wednesday and Thursday explaining the issue. The vendors who are capable and responsible for creating solutions are in the loop, said Lee. The public message here is chill out. The people who need to be involved are involved. He could not say how long it would take to fix the problem. In a statement, Microsoft said that it is investigating the matter and that it was unaware of any attacks trying to use the claimed vulnerability or of customer impact, which, of course, is what they always say. But according to Hansen, if attacks did appear, they could be bad. That's because they can be launched with very little bandwidth and because machines targeted would often remain disabled even after the DOS attack had stopped. This appears not to be a single bug, but in fact at least five, and maybe as many as 30 different potential problems. They just haven't dug far enough into it to really know how bad it can be. The results range from complete shutdown of the vulnerable machine to dropping legitimate traffic. Lee and Lewis are set to discuss the flaws 2 weeks from now at the T2 conference in Helsinki, but they will not release additional details if the flaws remain unpatched. So it's not just you that has a problem. It's the entire internet, Windows, Linux, the Mac, everybody.
What I found stunning about that story, Nick, is you said that this will knock down firewalls.
Yeah.
That's frightening.
Yeah. Well, because the problem is, before you get anywhere else on the internet, including through a firewall, it's got to go through the TCP/IP drivers.
Of course.
The TCP/IP stack. And that's where the flaw is.
Coming so soon after the DNS spoofing revelation attack, the core infrastructure of the internet really needs updated. And there was an interesting...
Well, for heaven's sake, it's 50 years old.
Right. There was a very interesting discussion on Security Now with Steve Gibson last week, talking about the DNSSEC servers that need to be put in. And it seems to be more of a political issue now than a technical issue, because the U.S. government wants to run it. How many people knew that the U.S. Department of Commerce controls the internet?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Alcor doesn't?
They think they do.
You're right. So the U.S. wants to run it. The rest of the world doesn't want the U.S. to run it. So they're trying to...
You think?
Yeah, trying to figure out some way to increase the security, change the backbones. But part of the problem in the U.S. is because the infrastructure is so old and there's so many servers that it's going to be very hard to make any major changes. Look at IPv6.
No, it's not going to be hard. It's going to be expensive.
Expensive, yeah. Look at IPv6. How long have we been trying to implement that?
Right, right. And that's actually relatively simple.
Yeah.
Comparatively.
Yeah.
Very simple. So, yeah, it's going to be an interesting problem.
Getting back to your story, is the flaw in the TCP/IP inherent from the original concept and design, or is this something that crept in?
It really looks like it's inherent in TCP/IP itself.
No kidding.
And that it's the basic concept behind what everybody uses. I mean, you can't get to the internet without it.
Because back then, no one was worried about security. There were no bad guys. It was just trying to get the thing to work.
Because I find it surprising that it took so long to be exposed.
Yeah. Well, and that's what they're finding, is nobody ever delved into this. You know, everybody just... How often do you look at that stuff? You know, TCP/IP stacks are everywhere. Everybody uses them. They're fine.
And they've been working, yeah.
And now people are starting to look back and saying, geez, crackers, this is a problem.
Well, good. It's good that they are, and it's good that it's going to get fixed. That's great. And kudos to those that are doing that.
Well, yeah, exactly. Speaking of design flaws, we have the Apple iPhone. Two design flaws. That could pose potential security problems, according to a researcher. The first one concerns the iPhone's email application, which automatically downloads image within an email, according to Aviv Roth, a security researcher. That's problematic because the image will refer back to a server-side script when it is downloaded, indicating to the sender that the email has been opened and the email address is valid. The address can then be spammed. Email applications usually are configured to block images from untrusted sources to prevent the problem. He suggests that users avoid using the email application or be careful when clicking on links in an email that comes from an untrusted source. The second design flaw is how iPhone's email application displays URLs. Messages can be shown in plain text or HTML. When in HTML mode, a user can get an email where the text of the link is different from the actual link. The true link can be displayed by hovering over the text, and a pop-up window reveals the URL. But the problem is the pop-up window truncates the URL since there isn't enough space on the screen. Attackers could create a website with a long subdomain name in order to fool a user into thinking it's a legitimate site. In fact, a website designed to trick people into revealing personal information is known as a phishing site. After the bad link is served up in the Safari web browser, the user may still only see a fraction of the URL. If the address bar is clicked in mobile Safari, the cursor jumps to the end of the URL, so a person must scroll back to see the URL in its entirety. Neither Apple's mobile Safari nor the desktop version of the browser have any sort of phishing filter. Raff said he notified Apple more than 2 months ago about the design flaws. The company told Raff it was working on fixes, but hadn't said when those fixes would be released. Raff said he decided to go public with the information since Apple has since released at least three iPhone updates, but has not addressed this issue. I think they put their own users at much more risk by not fixing this, Raff said in an interview. At least now the users who read this will know to be careful. It's only a matter of time until the bad guys will find this anyway. So if you are using an iPhone and you are using Safari, then you need to be a little careful about what you do in if you're using an iPhone.
Or an iPod Touch. I just got spam on my iPod Touch here, yep. And the same can happen there.
You have to be very careful because it will not let you block those images. We've seen this for a very, very long time.
The desktop
from the one
apps
pixel,
do it.
Right. It used to be, you know, you put an image. If somebody puts an image in a webmail, in an email, right, and you're viewing it in HTML mode so you can see all the pretty colors and all the pictures and all the fonts and all that stuff. What happens is when it loads that picture, it can be set up to have to go back to the site to grab those pictures. So by looking at your logs, you know that if it went back to those site for the pictures, then that email was actually opened.
Well, wouldn't people start also complaining, though, especially with the iPhones and that type of stuff, if you're downloading your email, now you're paying for the minutes. Now, if you're getting a lot of junk and spam, that's eating up some of your minutes. And I would think the community would start jumping on a lot of the, you know, the tighter controls to stop the spamming because it's eating up my cell minutes.
It's not exactly the cell minutes. It's the data plan on your phone, but there is a bandwidth cap on most data smartphone plans.
And it's
just
eating
like
it up.
Same, but different.
Right. And so it's a bigger issue now. It's what we've been talking about with local ISPs considering bandwidth caps on your home service.
Well, that's why I'm surprised
too,
right? There isn't an uproar so far on the iPhones.
Well, one of the things that you can do in your home system, of course, most of them are set up to automatically do this nowadays. They will not go to, Thunderbird is anyway. I don't know that Outlook or Outlook Express is. But Thunderbird, for example, will simply not go to certain sites that are known to be phishing sites.
Mm-hmm.
So if you get an email and it's got a link to one of those sites for a picture, it won't go. It simply won't go. You'll get an X.
Firefox will also trap
and there's a button.
Right.
There is a button. Apple Mail does the same thing on the Mac. There's a button that says download images. So if you want to download the images, you can.
Right. But generally, you shouldn't do that. If it's blocked them, there was a reason. But unfortunately, neither the iPhone nor the iTouch has that feature. And I understand you got to leave something out when you make a small app for a small device. But really, security shouldn't be the thing.
I love it right
Not
now with
today.
Avast. I've been getting it lately with Avast. I got it on and it goes, and then all these lights come flashing out warning me that there's a virus in this email. Do I want to delete it? And of course, I say yes.
Right.
But just that, or when it does the update. Virus definitions have been updated.
Virus definitions are updated.
When I'm around a computer that makes a weird noise like that, like a siren noise, I tell everybody, run!
Yeah.
Right. There is a preference to turn off the email preview. So when you're looking at your list of messages, you can delete obvious spam before it actually tries to view it.
Well, we've been saying for years, always turn off your preview pane.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yep.
Always. Never run with it.
Yep.
And that helps. But it doesn't help for the not obvious spam.
Right.
Yes. Okay. Now, you may have heard about operating in the cloud and cloud computing and all of this stuff. It's a term that essentially originated, a while ago, but has been popularized with things like Google Apps, where you can go onto Google's website and sign up for it, and you can do your word processing right online and your spreadsheets right online, and your presentations, your PowerPoint type things, right online so that you never have to worry about where you are to get your documents. They're real easy to share. They're real easy to get to. As long as you can get to a browser and type in your username and password, you have access to your documents. And Google worries about backing them up and all of that other nonsense. So that's nice, and that's called cloud computing because all your data lives in the cloud. And there are other things where you can, for example, use under Linux. There are programs you can run that let you use your 6 gigabytes of Google storage as a disk. It looks like a disk on your computer,
right?
And you can just pull data over to it, save data to it, and again, they back it up and do
under
all
fuse.
Of that stuff. Right. And then one of the things that that we're seeing is that other places are trying to do this. Well, now Microsoft is trying to do it too.
Oh,
they will unveil at the end of their month their Cloud OS, the secretive Rayazi project that provides a virtual Windows operating system platform for the rapid development, employment, and maintenance of internet services and applications. Microsoft will unveil details later this month at its Professional Developers Conference, the PDC, and show developers the APIs and plumbing services provided by a utility computing platform codenamed Red Dog. In essence, it is an applications development and execution platform that lives on the internet. Red Dog is similar to Amazon's EC2, their Elastic Computer Cloud, and Google's App Engine, which are both cloud-based
another thing they can
platforms.
Screw up.
Well, yeah, well.
What makes you say that, Dave?
Well, yeah.
I mean, I'm sorry. It's right up there with that Windows Defender.
Now what happened?
That is about as handy as a screen door in a submarine.
Yeah.
When is Microsoft going to get sued by Clifford, the big red dog?
Yeah, well, it's only a code name. Code names don't count because they're not out in public, theoretically.
And more to the point, when is Microsoft going to give us an operating system that works consistently and well?
XP is pretty stable with this new Service Pack 3.
Mm-hmm. Pretty stable.
It's been very stable.
Okay, so that's the answer to that question.
And it's only been out for 10 years.
Yeah, right. Well, the big thing about this whole Cloud OS
work on it.
Is that really hits Microsoft where it lives. If I work in the cloud, and all my data are in the cloud, and all my applications work in the cloud, why do I even need an operating system?
People have talked about the potential for a Chrome computer, Google's new Chrome browser. All it does is run Chrome, and you get Google Apps, Google Spreadsheet, Google Docs, Google Maps, Google, you know, Google owns the world now.
Right.
So now Google is the competitor for Microsoft.
Facebook, Blogger, all of those things are web-based, out on the net. They're all part of Google. There's an operating system called GOS. It's built on Linux. You can run it as a regular Linux, but it's built, specifically designed, to run all of those Google apps. Google keeps saying they're not behind it. But so one of these days they'll buy it. And it'll be good, I suppose. But that lets you do all of this stuff out on the web, and you don't really need... All you need is a machine that's powerful enough to run a web browser.
And access to Wi-Fi.
That's all you need. And therefore, you can use your stuff anywhere. Take a look at these new netbooks they're looking at, and they're all aiming at the $100 computer. If you've got all your data up on the web, and you've got all of your data up on the cloud... Then even if the TSA takes your laptop, what have you lost? $100. Get another one, you're back up. It's done. So, all right, we are done for another week. I very much want to thank Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Chris Reich. Once again, we didn't get to his what you call it. We'll get to it next week because it'll be a live show.
Well, we've been kind of busy.
We're talking about free software.
We'll talk about free software next week. I'm Nick Francesco. Join us everywhere on Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.